And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Johnny Casella. Johnny is an Australian Federal Police officer who has gone down an unexpected path. With his wife, Rachel, he was loving everything about being the father of a beautiful baby daughter. But before too long, he discovered that his daughter had been affected by an incurable birth defect. Rachel and Johnny have now written a heartwarming account of their daughter Mackenzie's life, child loss, and a journey through IVF. Johnny, welcome to Dads on the Air. Johnny, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Thank you very much, Bill, for having me on. I really appreciate the time to share the story of my daughter. And I think that radio show like this is much needed. So congratulations on your success.
Johnny, the book Mackenzie's Mission is mainly written by your wife, Rachel, and describes events before and after 22 October 2017. Now, that was the start of Mackenzie's Mission. Can you tell us a bit about Mackenzie?
Yeah, of course. My wife and I got married in 2016, and we started trying to have a baby pretty much straight away. And after a miscarriage, Rachel fell pregnant with Mackenzie, who was born in March of 2017. We had her for 10 beautiful weeks where we thought we had a perfectly healthy little girl and loved every minute of it. But at 10 weeks, she was diagnosed with a recessive genetic disorder called spinal muscular atrophy, which meant that her average lifespan would be about 8 months. And we lost her at just over 7 months of age. She was the most beautiful, intelligent little girl that I could have imagined having as a daughter, but unfortunately she was only a little flash in the pan of our lives.
What was the first sign for you that there was something wrong?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we had no expectations of Mackenzie. We had, as I said, this 10-week-old little baby. She was our first. And we didn't have any expectations that she'd be able to sit up or move around or hold herself up at all. But at about 10 weeks, she started fussing on the breast, not feeding the way that she should be. And so Rachel took her to a lactation consultant who quickly said, there's nothing wrong with the way that Mackenzie is feeding. However, her muscle tone is down and she should be able to hold herself a lot better than what she currently was. She actually indicated to Rachel and pointed to a baby that was within a few days of age of Mackenzie. And the baby was propping itself up and looking around. And Mackenzie was nowhere near that. She was effectively just laying there still, not really moving. So once Rachel had seen that, we rushed Mackenzie to a paediatrician a couple of days later. And that's how we got the diagnosis.
What is your aim in writing the book?
That sort of came out of nowhere. So initially when Mackenzie was diagnosed and later passed, Rachel started writing her blog, which is called My Life of Love, and she was just writing little articles probably once or twice a week on different topics that were close to her heart and things that were happening to us and around us with the people, way people were interacting, or how to handle grief, that sort of thing. And eventually it sort of got to a point where we were approached to put it into a book through Allen & Unwin, the publisher. And I had the idea pretty early on that even though Rachel would be writing the book, I would write something of an introductory chapter for myself and then pop up throughout the book at different stages where I felt that a father's perspective might add a little bit more clarity on what Rachel was talking about from a male perspective. Through this journey, as the dad, I've been largely forgotten. Not in a way that's particularly awful, it's just people tend to focus on the mum as the one who's primarily grieving, and the father is usually expected to be a lot stronger and a lot more able to and these sort of challenges.
I think that's really important because there is a very heavy toll on fathers. And I mean, look, obviously the mother is very close to the child, but like with fathers, you've got to keep going to work. You've got to keep the family together. You've got to, you know, you can't afford to fall in a heap, which is probably what I'm sure you felt like doing.
I definitely had my days. I certainly did struggle. I was lucky enough with working with the Australian Federal Police. I was able to effectively stand down from work from the May right through to the beginning of the next year. So as soon as Mackenzie was diagnosed, I was able to take personal leave and actually spend that time with my daughter, which I couldn't be more grateful for, because I got to know Mackenzie and spend more time with Mackenzie than most fathers would over years of it for a child's formative years, if that makes sense. Because I was with her 24 hours a day, I didn't have to go to work. I got to stay home and spend time with both Rachel and Mackenzie, and we travelled around Australia and really created some really precious memories. So I was really lucky in that regard that I didn't have to go to work, but the memories on that trip would get washed in with memories of others. So if I go to, when we went to Broome, my theory is that when I think of Broome, Mackenzie will always be in those memories. However, you know, as the father, I did notice friends would call up and ask how Rachel's going. Family would ask how Rachel's going.
You were given something which I hadn't heard of before, something called a memory box. What was that all about?
So basically, Mackenzie's little memory box, I don't know where we got the idea for it or where we got it, to be quite honest, but it was probably something that Rachel came up with. But if we travelled and we had a plane ticket, bus ticket, movie ticket, receipt from a restaurant or a photo of us out and about, we put it in the memory box. And Rachel was very good at keeping up to date with that. So if we had little things that we were doing daily, we always tried to do something every day with Mackenzie that was special. So it didn't have to be a big trip to Broome. It could simply have been a walk around Centennial Park in Sydney. But we would try to create a memory around that, and little memories would go into the memory box.
And how is Rachel now? I mean, it's, you know, it's 3 years. Is it sort of the pain starting to ease a little bit?
That's another very good question. I don't think the pain of losing a child ever eases or goes away. You find ways to live with it. You find ways to turn it into parts of yourself and just exist with that grief that's always, and that hole that's always in your heart. So Rachel now, she's back at work, working full time, doing a very good job of it, and we're focusing our energies now that Mackenzie's mission has kicked off, and we've sort of achieved what we wanted to in that space, in at least initially what we wanted to achieve in that space. Rachel and I are now focusing more on our IVF journey and actually giving Mackenzie a sibling, which has proven to be far more difficult than what either one of us had ever expected.
Johnny, we've talked about how you did lose your beautiful daughter Mackenzie. The condition you described was SMA. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, SMA, or spinal muscular atrophy. It's a recessive genetic disorder and the number one genetic killer of children under two in Australia. And even though it's prevalent is probably not the right word, but it's more common than what people would probably imagine. We don't know about it because people don't talk about infants dying, basically. What it is it's basically the childhood version of motor neuron disease. So if your listeners, it's the childhood version of that. So basically it's muscle wastage. The brain ceases to be able to communicate with the muscles, and as a result, the children who have this affliction, first of all, stopping able to use their limbs, their arms and their legs, that eventually moves closer into the centre line of the body where they lose the ability to swallow and then eventually the ability to breathe. And so we lost Mackenzie to a common cold at 7 months and 11 days because she just didn't have the physical strength to fight it off.
It must have been terrible for you as it got worse and worse. Look, we might take a short break Johnny, and there's a, I know there was a song you used to play for Mackenzie. Could you tell us which one it was and anything else you'd like to tell us about your choice?
Yeah, so the song I've chosen is Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses, which might at first impression sound like a bit of an odd choice to sing to a child, but when you actually break that song down and listen to the words, it's actually quite sweet. He initially started playing Mackenzie an acoustic version of Sweet Child of Mine, but as I want to do, I ended up starting to play the original version, and I'd air guitar in front of her, anything to get a smile. So this song holds some really precious memories for me.
Thank you. And that was Sweet Child of Mine as by Guns N' Roses, especially chosen for us today by our guest Johnny Casella. And we're talking about his new book written with his wife Rachel called Mackenzie's Mission. And we might start talking about that. Mackenzie's Mission, that started on that day when you lost Mackenzie, I guess. And you've been commended by all sorts of people. Could you tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, absolutely. We're really proud of Mackenzie's Mission. It actually started probably a couple of weeks after Mackenzie was diagnosed, believe it or not. Rachel decided that we would send a letter to every single member of federal parliament, telling them our story and searching for some sort of change in this space. So I initially protested. I didn't see the point in contacting members of parliament. After all, they get letters from families in similar situations every day, and why would they listen to us above anyone else who is having a difficult time or losing a child? So I was incredibly surprised when within a few hours of these letters being delivered around Parliament House, that members of Parliament were actually reaching out. Rachel started receiving phone calls. We got emails back from members of Parliament at all levels. And eventually we had meetings with Brad Hazzard, the Health Minister for New South Wales. We had meetings with a couple of senators and another House reps. Greg Hunt met with us, and we even met our now Prime Minister while he was still Treasurer. So we were really, really blown away with the reception we got. And on our first meeting with Mr. Hunt, he promised us that he would do something in Mackenzie's name to make a change. And within a few weeks of that conversation with him, he announced at the budget in 2018, I think it was, Mackenzie's Mission, which is a $20 million pilot project aimed at screening parents prior to them conceiving a child, whether or not they're high risk for genetic conditions like spinal muscular atrophy, cystic fibrosis, or Fragile X. And basically it's 1,300 different conditions that are going to be screened for. And Mackenzie's Mission forms a small part, a $20 million small part of a $500 million genomics project, which aims to effectively change the way that we do family planning here in Australia around genetic testing, IVF, education for GPs and other medical practitioners. So we're very, very proud. And when we started seeking a bit of assistance or a change from the federal government, we were not expecting to receive such a massive program as Mackenzie's Mission and the Australian Genomics Project.
That's a wonderful way of remembering Mackenzie, isn't it? I mean, that's going to be so beneficial to the whole community. Although it's going to force parents to make some difficult choices, I guess. And as you had to make difficult choices even while Mackenzie was alive, didn't you?
It will put people in a position where they have to make choices, and I think it's very important it will force families into making choices. However, it's a voluntary scheme. By no means is it mandatory for people to receive training to retrieve this treatment or scanning prior to having a child. But it's also very important for your listeners to understand that we're not talking about eugenics. We're not talking about choosing an eye colour or hair colour, height or gender. We're simply scanning parents for recessive genetic conditions which are either life-ending or very serious, some of which can be treated either at birth or in early infancy, which would then basically relieve the child of any symptoms later on if it's detected early enough. We believe that information is power. So if you have the information that you are at high risk of passing something on to your child, knowing about it early, being able to take appropriate steps, will improve the life of not only your child, but of the rest of your family as well. And we had, unfortunately, we found ourselves in a position last year where Rachel fell pregnant again with a baby that we've named Bella. And it turned Mackenzie. So we sat down together and unanimously decided that we would interrupt that pregnancy because after seeing the life that Mackenzie had towards the end, how difficult and painful that was, we would never put any child through that again. And so we ended that pregnancy out of the love for Bella, which was gut-wrenching because we obviously really wanted to meet Bella and have her in our lives, but we really believed that for her, we made the best decision.
You've been through a lot, haven't you? I mean, you thought when you were injured in the line of your business, very seriously injured with facial injuries, you probably thought, well, this is as bad as it gets, but you had a lot more in front of you.
That was a different thing. I was in the Solomon Islands in 2006, and they had a riot over some election results while I was there, and I managed to have a rock thrown and hit me in the face, which shattered my top and bottom jaws and lost 7 teeth. So right when that was done, and I came back home to Australia and started receiving surgeries and 4 years of treatments to get everything reset, I did think this is pretty much the hardest thing I'm ever going to have to go through, but it pales into absolute nothingness when, for the want of a better story, you're carrying your deceased child down to the morgue because you don't want anybody else to do it. You realise just how much of a scale tragedy and difficulties are in our existence. It's crazy.
When you and Rachel decided on IVF, I'm sure you weren't conscious of what was going to be involved and what you finished up going through with IVF.
No, I didn't really know anything about IVF before we started the journey. And I don't think many people do. For the most part, people think, you know, if you receive the treatment, the doctors do their thing, and then you walk out a month later or so with the baby, and or pregnant, I should say. But I didn't really know anything about it. And after we've had the better part of 9 rounds of IVF now, and you watch the hormone levels in your partner rising and falling, the injections every single day, hopes get raised higher and higher as the egg collection day gets closer, and you simply, up to this point, we've simply been disappointed each time. As on the egg collection day, we might receive, for example, 6 eggs, and then over the course of a week, as those eggs are developing into embryos, some of them drop off. They don't survive because they're not strong enough, or they might have some sort of chromosomal abnormality that means that they're not compatible with life. So at the end of six days, those 6 embryos might be down to 1 or 2. And then because of spinal muscular atrophy, we have to get them genetically tested to ensure that they don't have SMA as well. As a result of that, at the end of a round of IVF, you might have 1 embryo or none. So it's definitely a very difficult journey, and one that isn't spoken about as much as it should be. I think especially men should speak about the IVF journey more than what they do, because it's hard on us. Even though we're not the ones having the injections multiple times a day and getting prodded and probed by doctors, it is tough because we are expected to be strong and maintain positivity and our high energy levels for our partners while they're going through what's quite frankly an awful experience as they get their eggs harvested and embryos transferred back into the mum and the whole process. So I really think it needs to be discussed more.
And really, that's what this book, Mackenzie's Mission, is about. It's full of very personal stories, and I want to thank you, Johnny, for being so open with us today. I mean, some of this is not easy to talk about, and you've been very open, and I think people will get a lot out of about hearing you speak in the way you have.
Well, thank you. I really do hope so. I'd like to classify myself as a bit of an open book, and I know Rachel is certainly pushing for me to be a bit more of an advocate around men's mental health and just men opening up and asking for help a little bit more around, especially around IVF and family planning and that journey, because as I said earlier, we are often forgotten about. So yeah, I hope that your listeners have definitely get something out of this.
And unfortunately, that's all we have time for today, but look, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email, and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll be back with another show next week, but in the meantime, I'd just like to give once again a very sincere thank you to our guest, Johnny Casella, one of the authors of, co-author of Mackenzie's Mission. Johnny, thanks again for being on the program.
Oh, absolutely my pleasure. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I love talking about my daughter, so I'll always take the chance.
As I said, we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.